It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Can you believe Miguel Vargas, or any White Sox player for that matter, was named the American League Player of the Week? Did you feel differently about the Cubs purposely throwing at him after the week he had, after hearing what Spiegel and Holmes talked about on the afternoon show about Vargas supposedly attempting to shield PCA from seeing a ball in the outfield? Will there, should there be retribution when the two teams meet on the South Side in July?
That's an interesting question. The second part of it. First of all, congratulations to the Player of the Week, Miguel Vargas. That's great to see a guy get rewarded for a really good run. And I don't know how sustainable it is, but I think he's shown now that you can be interested in him as a prospect, and maybe you don't move Colston Montgomery to third base. Maybe he just stays in the minor leagues for a very long time, just kind of toiling forever, and then you Tim Elko him. I'm just joking. I was just making a bad joke. I think I do feel differently about. I thought that Matt and Lawrence had a phenomenal conversation. It really interests me because I did not see what they were talking about as I watched the game, that he purposely attempted to shield PCA Vargas. He got in front of him on purpose and would not let him look over. And, you know, frankly, that's good baseball. That is that's smart. That's what you're supposed to do. That kind of stuff is kind of tricks of the game stuff, heady veteran stuff, the kind of little thing that you talk about in winning baseball. But the Sox don't appear to me, or I should say Will Venable doesn't appear to me to be somebody that is
petty.
I just don't see him playing heady baseball, not Barbie baseball, but I just don't see him going that route. I don't see the old school. I see a guy that is not going to teach bad lessons to his people. Is that a bad way of putting it? I mean it as a respectful, a new baseball guy, not an old baseball guy. That's all I meant.
Not surprised that Miguel Vargas was the Player of the Week based on what he did in both Cincinnati and over at Wrigley Field. The guy had himself a month, let alone a week. He was red hot. I was surprised PCA didn't get it. Somebody from the Reds was named the National League Player of the Week. But PCA had a good weekend at Wrigley, but not a good early week. As far as the retribution part, when these two teams get back together, sure, I'm all for it. As a fan, let's get some more. Friday, okay, the guy, I was in a little group text with a couple of buddies on Friday as that game got started. And, if you wanted to throw at somebody, or if the White Sox want to be upset with somebody, for waking the Cubs up Friday afternoon, look at Chase Meidroth, okay, for that ugly slide he had early on in the game that upset the Cubs. And from there on, the Cubs literally put their foot on their throat and never looked back, okay? So if you wanted to, if somebody's going to get thrown at it early on in that series, it might be Meidroth, especially if he does any of that stuff again.
I think based on what we saw last year from Miguel Vargas, yes, shock and awe would be the reaction to him being named the American League Player of the Week. He did not look like a major league hitter last August and September. He did something with his hand placement that has been well documented now, and he's a different hitter. And his arc has changed in the organization. You have expectations. The first White Sox player to be the Player of the Week since Luis Robert in 2023. It's been a long time. I think what we learned on the afternoon show was fascinating. Matt Spiegel unearthed this from talking with Len Casper, and Darren Jackson and Len had seen this in real time. Miguel Vargas was trying to block the view of Pete Crow Armstrong from the outfield. It's gamesmanship. It happens a lot. It's the game inside the game that people like Ron Coomer and Darren Jackson and ex-players see that we may miss. So it was nice to hear that brought to the airways. We'll listen to that audio later, which explains a lot about why Brad Keller, why the Cubs may have been agitated by Miguel Vargas or a little bit irritated. And I think Quinton Berry, the third base coach, was chirping a little bit, and they kind of escalated. So that might explain a little bit more to the story than we knew initially. Will this carry over into July, the Crosstown series then? Baseball players have tremendous memories, memories of elephants. They're never going to forget this kind of stuff. I don't think Will Venable is petty. I don't know that he can control this, though. The first time that somebody goes up there,
exactly,
they're going to remember.
It is a really fascinating question.
Voice of Jed Hoyer. He's with Mully and Haw this morning at 9 a.m. What did you think of Matt Shaw's ballyhooed return to the Cubs lineup? How long will they give Shaw to prove he belongs this time? Do you think they're done tinkering with the lineup or order after Ian Happ comes back tonight?
Well, Matt Shaw struck out the first time up, and I was like, okay, you're not in Iowa anymore. What's going on?
You were done with him.
I was like, okay, man. I have gone out on a limb for you, Matt Shaw. It's about time you start to deliver. And then he did. Two hits is nice. The go-ahead double was nicer. I liked what I saw. I don't know to the naked eye. You guys can weigh in. But the approach, the stance, I mean, we'll need more of a sample size to be able to judge. But I do think it was nice to see some lineup certainty. I know that that'll change when Happer comes back because everything else will go into its natural place. And probably Mo Baller will go back to Iowa, even though he had two hits. Moises Ballesteros had two hits last night. That was nice to see. But I do think that you need to settle into an everyday lineup. And I hope Matt Shaw does enough to stay, does enough to keep Jed Hoyer out of the trade market for third baseman. That said, I can't wait to ask Jed Hoyer where he stands in the evolution of this leadoff conversation. Because is it the guy that you want to grind out at bats like Ian Happ? Is he going back to the top of the order? Or have we seen a star is born on the north side, and PCA should stay leading off because you want one of the more dangerous hitters in baseball at the plate as often as possible?
Well, I would be shocked if PCA led off tonight, and that means Ian Happ's in the lineup batting fifth, as an example. I think the question is, how far down in the order does PCA go when Ian Happ takes his spot back? Because, I mean, Craig Counsell's already gone out of the way to say, that's his spot when he gets back.
Things change.
That's baseball.
Things change,
well,
Craig.
Let's see. So, David, you're saying you would keep PCA back at number one.
Yes.
Where would you bat Ian Happ? Would
fifth.
You move everybody down?
I would bat him fifth.
Okay. Interesting. So it's something to talk about. There's no doubt about that. I did think of you immediately when I saw Matt Shaw strike out last night. But I also, to be fair, I thought of you when Matt Shaw put the Cubs ahead 7-6 with that double, that he wanted to make a triple. I mean, he was flying. Yeah. He was flying. He can run.
He was flying
around those bases. See, it felt good for him. That was a good moment for him. And, yeah, I guess Ballesteros will be the odd man out, and he'll be back down, and maybe he can learn how to slide. You know, put your foot on the base, son.
You know, if you go inside Ballesteros' numbers, they're excellent. He really, I know he hasn't hit the hell out of the ball, but he doesn't strike out. When he came up and you knew he was not going to strike
contact.
Out, yes, he is a good player. And his numbers say, and I know this is a White Sox excuse, but he's been unlucky. The ball has gone at people more than he hasn't been hitting. So he has really good, strong contact. He hits the ball. I like that guy. I think he's going to be a good player whenever he gets a regular chance. I thought Matt Shaw seemed like, and I was just kind of, all I cared about was the idea that his leg kick had to stay below the waist. It seemed more subtle. It didn't seem as kind of, I didn't want to get him in a chorus line. I thought he was doing.
It didn't stand out.
It didn't jump out at
right.
you. So I think there has been an adjustment. I think he's done kind of what they want him to do. And it's, that's a hell of a game for him to come back you're under that kind of scrutiny and you get a couple hits, that's pretty good.
Yep.
I'd feel good about him, and I do. I think he's going to be okay.
Let me just add this to the conversation before we move on. Ian Happ, lifetime batting fifth. If all the spots in the order, his OPS is highest when he's batting fifth. It's 885, and he's done that for 119 games and 406 at bats. So it has been done before, and he's been successful at it.
Yes, I am not arguing that. I like, we'll talk about it later. We'll I just don't want to get too much into the
weeds.
Batting order, line of beast stuff.
It's a great question.
All right, let's stop all the draft prep. The verdict is in. Did you see the Four Letter Network's latest NBA mock draft following last week's draft combine that Derek Queen is going to the Bulls at number 12. Queen reportedly falling because he didn't do well athletic testing and didn't shoot well in the drills. Would you be okay nonetheless if the 6'10", 247-pound 20-year-old out of Maryland was selected by your Bulls?
Well, that's our guy. We picked him a long time ago. That was the guy we identified. That guy would help the Bulls. He's got a beautiful touch. I don't know when they pulled him out of drills or I don't know what they were doing that he didn't do well at the combine. And frankly, that delights me because I think the athletic drills is interesting because I think you need to have a certain amount of athleticism in order to make a mark in the NBA. That guy kind of reminds me of Mark Aguirre, and I know that's a crazy thing to say because he's 6'10", and he plays a different position, but he's a big-bodied guy, and he gets the ball, and he can do some things, and he's you keep wondering, just playing the 82-game season, how much weight's he going to lose? How much better shape can you get him in? Could you get him into a gym and kind of turn him turn his body into Horace Grant's body? That's what happened with Horace. He got into the gym. He looked completely different than his twin brother Harvey because he became more of a power forward. I don't think he's Moses Malone, but I think he's got a big body that can grow and that you could work with. The lack of athleticism is going to bother teams if he can't do certain things and you feel like he can't run or he's a little tight here or there. I think there's a lot of hidden potential in that kid. We identified him early. That's our guy. Brandon, I was thinking of you as I saw this thing. I nearly fell off my chair. I was so pleased. That would be a win for the Chicago Bulls, in my opinion.
I agree. That would be a win. I think he's a guy that likes to go get a rebound. So that's something the Bulls lack, is somebody that likes to go get a rebound. So if he could be the replacement for Patrick Williams, I'm all in on that.
Yeah, I think definitely. Queen me. This is definitely something, Queen if you're me. The Bulls, you like seeing this because you let him drop to you and you have a difference maker as a rookie. Now, I saw one report yesterday and all the speculation will continue for the next month, but the Asa Newell was linked to them or mocked to them.
Right.
Colin Murray Boyles was mocked to them.
KC,
did you see?
Talked to him. It was a really good interview.
It was a good interview at the combine.
Yep.
Yeah, Cam Smith talked to him as well, and was very impressed. And so, also the French player, Noah Essendjie, that the multi-talented, versatile? But you just don't know players coming from, you know, European leagues. You just wonder about that. Derek Queen seems to me like, I don't want to say a sure thing, but you could certainly see him translating well. These athletic deficiencies, I wonder if we're overthinking it. I mean, it's still basketball, and you watch him play, and anybody can remember him from the Big Ten, and we certainly saw him in the tournament. This is a guy who can play. I think it really translates to the next level well. So the more that we see him kind of dropping, the better off it seems for the Bulls.
When you have touch,
with that, I'll take your questions.
How would you describe the NBA Conference Finals? Two teams haven't won the NBA titles, and the Knicks haven't won since 1973, the Thunder since 79, when they were the Supersonics. Do you like the new blood?
I really do. I think it, regardless of what the TV ratings may tell you, I think this is good for the league. I think the number of different champions, you can see it's happening already, seven different champions the last 7 years. It's the NFL. It's what the NFL has wanted. It's what the NFL tried to legislate, enforce, or dictate the parity around the league. And I think that creates suspense. And these playoffs have been terrific. You know, the NHL and the NBA playoffs have delivered. And the NBA now down to the conference finals. Indiana and New York, two well-coached teams. I do think, in fairness, Rick Carlisle has an NBA championship. I would give him, I understand, the slight nod. But I do think that even though I am a native Hoosier, I think I would like to see the Knicks win this. And I think I would like to see the Knicks win this because I like the story of Tibbs. I like Jalen Brunson, and I like the way they play. I like how hard they play. And I know both teams play hard, but I think the Knicks are going to win this one in the East, and I think OKC is going to win this in the West, and that's going to be a fascinating final because OKC has the kind of depth they haven't seen since 1979 in Seattle when they were winning for the Supersonics, and the fifth starter on that team was Lonnie Shelton.
I don't consider that the same team.
I know, but historically they are. Hey, the Knicks haven't won since 73. Can you name that starting five?
I know Willis Reed limped out there. I thought we talked about that earlier.
No shot. Can't name that starting five. I do think it's good for the NBA that the Knicks are relevant and back in the mix. There's nothing wrong with that. I thought I was reading the question wrong. I don't think you can use the Thunder and the Supersonics in the same sentence. I don't think that works, but I understand technically, yes. The Western Conference Finals are really the de facto NBA Finals. I think either team would beat either team in the West would beat either team in the East in the finals. So I think whoever wins between the T-Wolves and the Thunder are going to be your NBA champions. But yes, it is good for the NBA to get some new faces out there. And if this young man from Minnesota that we talked about in the first segment of the show is supposed, the Ant-Man is supposed to be that guy, then okay, let's see you. Let's see what you can do against SGA. Let's see what you can do. The Thunder could like steamroll them though if they felt like the Nuggets kind of gave them a little bit of a wake up call. I don't think they want to go seven again. So, but I think overall it's good. You know, the problem with watching the Pacers is the woulda, shoulda, coulda for the Bulls, right? Halliburton could have been here, and I think that's the part that would bug you as a Bulls fan instead of Patrick Williams.
Mully, you had it. Willis Reed at center.
Yeah.
Jerry Lucas and Bill Bradley at forward.
Bill Bradley.
And Walt Frazier and Earl the Pearl Monroe.
And Phil off the bench.
Phil Jackson off the bench.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Fun. So listen, this is a really good to talk about because I'm fascinated by it. I think that Oklahoma City has to win this. I think that they're way ahead. I think they're the favorite left, and I think the Knicks are the second favorite, not because the Knicks are better than the Wolves, but because everyone is figuring that Oklahoma City has enough to get by the Wolves, and the SGA greater than sign Anthony Edwards. So that'll be very interesting to see because the Ant has all sorts of talents and all sorts of ability. I think it's Oklahoma City's championship. And I think that with the top two seeds out of the East, you look at that and you're kind of scratching your head a little bit. How good are the Knicks, right? The Knicks are a team, as you say, incredible, try hard, break your hump team. It can keep things close. They can go down 20 and come back. But I don't know. I don't think of them as a champion. And I absolutely love Jalen Brunson. And we saw him play in the championship game in college, David. It's certainly in the semifinals we saw him. I think I left before the final for various reasons. But, you know, great player and great story. But I would say that I think it's going to be OKC. I'm cheering for the Pacers. I hope they win, but it could be the Knicks. I say that through gritted teeth because I do not like I just don't like the Knicks. I don't like the fans. I don't like their whole attitude. I don't like the stars that show up. I think it's cool that Timothy Chalamet is having a seizure on the sidelines, but it doesn't do much for me. So I just like him because of that movie. The Dylan movie, but, you know, anyway, I think OKC wins it, and I think that It's going to be fairly easy for them. I don't think they're going to need seven games to dispatch Minnesota, certainly not against the Knicks.
Different question on a different topic.
Voice of Mike Florio joined at 844. Kurt Warner was on the afternoon show and said this about Caleb Williams' film-watching habits.
I would like to think that, you know, if you're 21, 22, 23, and you're stepping into the NFL, that you're an adult too. And, you know, you're willing to say, you know, and ask for help in areas that you're not getting help. Like, I can't believe, you know, if Caleb were to go into a coach and say, hey, coach, I need help watching film. Kind of take me through a process. Like, this is what I'm watching. I'm not sure if it's the right thing. Take me through that. I can't believe the coach would say, ah, yeah, I don't have time for that. Caleb Williams, for goodness sakes. He could find the number of any player and any quarterback and any veteran quarterback that he wanted and said, hey, I'm not getting this inside the building. Let me go get it from Tom Brady.
What do you think about what you just heard there from Kurt Warner on our afternoon show?
Well, I think that Kurt Warner said something like that on Twitter and got like a really interesting reaction. I think that Caleb may have stepped in it a little bit is what I think. I think the problem that you have if you're Caleb Williams is that you show up in Chicago. He came out as a junior. He did transfer from Oklahoma. He had won the Heisman Trophy. The guy had $10 million in the bank in NIL money. It's hard to believe. He had his own personal quarterback's coach. It is hard to believe that he got to Chicago and was like on his own and shrugging and looking around.
Why am I so lonely?
Yeah, exactly. Why am I not, you know, why is no one telling me what to see here on this tape? I think Ben Johnson is gonna solve all these issues, but I think that Ben Johnson has talked about, it was one of the first things he said when he was introduced about the quarterback having the same mind as the play caller, seeing the game the same way. I think that he's going to break down tape with him. I think you want to watch some tape, son? Now we're going to spend 40 hours a week just watching tape on your time. So the help is there. The player can get better. The pressure is on. This is all about Caleb Williams, and he's got another step to take. And I can't help but wonder, you know, they didn't look at anybody else. That was there an agreement that you're our guy, we're not even going to interview Jaden Daniels? Does Jaden Daniels know how to watch tape? Did somebody help him do it? Did he learn how to do it first? There's a lot of problems with a lot of what's happened with this stuff.
Well, I feel like, and I felt like this in the beginning, I think I said it in the beginning, the organization, if not the organization, the coaching staff for sure, were afraid and intimidated by Caleb Williams and his status as the overall number one pick and the future QB1 of this organization and didn't really know how to handle it. The fact that we found out when they did dismiss not only the offensive coordinator but then the head coach, that the quarterback's coach wasn't talking to the quarterback. Like, what?
He was the passing game coordinator.
The passing game. What does the quarterback do? He passes the ball. They weren't like, really? I mean, like, that just shows you that something was going wrong up at Hallis Hall. So listen, onward and upward, turn the page, move forward. Ben Johnson's there. Caleb, you're not going to be alone anymore.
Yeah, I think to you sit here in a studio and we talk about all of the things going on in Chicago sports and we want to be strong with our opinions and all of that. But I think in this case, this is a quote that to me cries for context. It
yes.
really does.
Yes.
And taken out of context, I think we all have jumped to some conclusions that may or may not be accurate or may not be responsible because we have a snippet from an interview for a book that was turned into an article that we have now taken as an epistle about the offseason for the Bears and the future for Caleb Williams. It cries for context. To me, this speaks to just how poor the rapport and the relationship was between Caleb Williams and the previous coaching staff. Matt Eberflus was an awkward communicator. That's being kind. Shane Waldron didn't communicate. That's being real. So the combination of those guys, you could see why at times Caleb Williams would want some help in communicating with guys whose job it was to make sure that rapport and that relationship was tight and was the most important thing in the building. And frankly, it wasn't. They neglected that. That's on them. but it's also a moot point. They're gone. They were fired for their inability to get the most out of this young man. He's still a young man. So Ben Johnson arrives with his new staff. I guarantee you he's not watching film alone. Not anymore. He's going to be, he's not worried about how many voices are in his head. They're all talking. They're all asking. They're all filling his brain with all of these thoughts and all of this new stuff. So I think this is an old story that cries for context. Maybe we'll get it tomorrow when he addresses the media.
Can I say one other quick thing?
Finish your ball game.
You know, let's keep in context. When you talk about Caleb wanted to go to Minnesota and had a relationship with the coach and he's the quarterback whisperer, you know, Dan Quinn was the head coach behind the bit. So do you want to play for Matt Eberflus, defensive guy, Dan Quinn, defensive guy, who was in New England, who was the former linebacker, defensive guy, or do you want to play for a guy in Minnesota that is a quarterback whisperer? It doesn't surprise me at all that there was a relationship there when you look at the head coaches involved.
What are you most interested in tomorrow's NFL meetings? A vote against the tush push that will prevent the evil Eagles from overwhelming the rest of the league, or the vote to change the playoff seeding format 1-7 strictly by regular season record?
I can't believe we're still talking about the tush push. I hate the fact that they're banning it. I think it's soft on the Packers' behalf to bring it up, but it seems like it's just, good God, get rid of it already. They're going to figure out another way to circumvent it. It's just going to be a one-yard quarterback dive, all right? It's and the Eagles are probably going to do it better than anybody else. I find myself not really that into the flag football conversation, and really if they're going to pass that and all that, and not that it's un-American, but like I don't know that I really care and link the NFL to flag football and Olympic football. Seems kind of an odd thing. I'm curious about the reseeding of the playoffs. I'm curious about the defensive holding and the automatic first down, the touchback going to the 35. All these things are relevant, more relevant to me than the tush push, which we're over talking, and the Olympics.
Well, unless the NFLPA is getting involved with this tush push, is that like other players are worried about injuries because of it? It's been going on this long. It's not a dirty play. You know, if you can't stop it, do better. Right? Get more people around that can do it, or get somebody defensively that can figure out a way to stop the play. I'll be very disappointed if the tush push is voted out of football.
You know, David is on it as always. And I would say that the tush push, that is such a, I don't think the benefit the Eagles get is because somebody is pushing behind them and they're in a rugby scrum. I think it's because the line gets down, they figured it out, and their quarterback can carry like 900 pounds on his back, and we've seen him do it for fun in the weight room. That is the difference between them and everyone else. It's not because someone gave him a little shove in the rear end. So good, get rid of it. You can't do it. Guess what? They're going to come at you, and they're going to run a QB sneak. And, you know, the only way to stop that is if you somehow got rid of, like, cadence. If you no longer could go like, if they changed the cadence so the defensive guys could get off the ball in the same speed as the offensive guys, that would end that play.
That would end the
advantage of that play.
That's an interesting part of that conversation.
If that's what you want to do. But yeah. I hate the idea that they're going to get rid of the play because the Eagles do it better than everyone.
I know.
But the really interesting thing here is the reseeding of the playoffs. That to me is going to be really fascinating. So the idea now would be that you no longer go by, you no longer decide thing by head-to-head competition against each other. You decide it by record. And everything comes down to that, and they have different rule changes. They reseed the playoffs every round. So if two teams, somebody gets beat, if you're a lower seed, you're going to have to play the best teams to win a title. And they're trying to give an advantage to the teams that produce during the regular season. I find it really interesting that like an upset in the first round doesn't give a team an advantage in the second round. I like that idea, and I think it is kind of cool, and I will be very interested to see what other rule changes they come up with. But I'm with you. I'm so with you on that the tush push thing. All right, 312-644-6767. We got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw on the score.